Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters of agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Matt Dixon, Senior Meteorologist at the University of Kentucky Department of Agriculture. Our topic this week will be long-term weather outlook in Kentucky and weather-related disasters that we've had over the past year. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay. How are you doing?
Doing well this morning. We're in a remote location doing the same work that we always do, but we get a chance to come to Lexington and sit down with some folks up here that we don't visit with all that often, and that's a good thing. It keeps it lively.
That's yeah. Right. I'm excited today. We've got a special guest with us today, somebody that I can fuss at. About the weather, you know, I've been looking for somebody to fuss at all summer. Now I found him.
the weatherman.
He's in the hot seat today.
That's, man. Yeah, you got me. Thanks for having me, guys.
So. Sure. Matt Dixon, glad to have you. Just to begin with, for the folks that are listening, hadn't had a chance to get in touch with you before, tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been with UK.
So I grew up in southwestern Indiana, a little town called Vincennes. It's about an hour north of Evansville, and that's watermelon country up there. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely,
I worked on a horticulture-based operation for about 7-8 years there, and watermelon, cantaloupe, you name it. But I was always interested in the weather.
Right.
And I went to Purdue University, got my bachelor's in atmospheric sciences, then went to Mississippi State, got my master's there, and this job opened up at UK, and I had the best of both worlds. I had the ag, and I had the weather, and Tom Pretty, he just retired a couple of years ago. He was at UK for 43 years, but
right.
He hired me back in 2012. I got here, go figure, right in the middle of a drought.
Of course.
So now it's
course.
Well, it's been good up until now. I can tell you that. Yeah.
It started before I got here. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, I've been here for over 10 years now and loved every minute of it. So,
yeah.
That's great. Well, we're glad to have you here and glad for the information that you put out because it's information we as agents use regularly.
Absolutely.
The weather is one of those funny things, you know, we can look at data that we've collected in the past and it can tell us what's happened in the past. Doesn't always give us a clear view of what we're looking at the future, but a lot of models are used now that can take that data and plug in and we can look at and not really determine 100%, but can forecast somewhat some of the trends that we're possibly getting into. So
give us an idea. So, yeah, it's been a wild year here in the state of Kentucky.
It has.
I mean, we had the tornadoes back in December. We got into spring. We had some drought conditions develop out in western Kentucky. Of course, hit corn at the absolute wrong time in many cases. Mm-hmm. Then we had the July flooding in eastern Kentucky, and now we're talking drought again.
Yep.
So our weather has taken center stage this past year and been very impactful for many Kentuckians across the state. So.
It's hard to think about having droughts and the historic floods that we've had in the same year.
Yeah, it's been something else. You know, we've been in a wetter and warmer climate the past decade, but that doesn't mean we can't have periods of dry conditions or cooler temperatures here and there. This past month has been cooler than normal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've had two bouts of drought this year.
Yep.
It's carried on in western Kentucky for a while. And you're starting to see some of those long-term impacts. The Mississippi River's looking bad.
Yep.
I know some people have said you got to go back to the 80s to find the last time that river was this low. And
I wondered, you know, how long it had been since it had been that low. I didn't know
I can think of a couple of years, not too distant past, 4 or 5 years ago, when it got fairly low, but not these historical lows that we have right now.
And, I mean, I told you I got to UK in 2012, and that was a pretty significant drought, to say the least. Since then, with our wetter climate, we've had these short-term flash droughts. They don't stick around very often just because it seems like we're in it, and then we have some big-time rainfall events, and we're out. I remember back in 2019, we had our driest September ever. I think the state averaged 22 hundredths of an inch that year. But that was followed by our fourth wettest October on record. So, once again, we're in it. We're out. And
you know, and a lot of times a hurricane will be coming up from the south and it'll save us. You know, a lot of times when we're in those conditions, we'll have that, you know, kind of push up through there, a late season kind of a hurricane. And
we haven't had that this year.
No, I know. So, I'm well aware. Trust me. Trust me.
Talk about the flooding in the eastern part of the state. Those peripheral bands off of the last hurricane we did have did reach the eastern part of the
state. Did.
But not necessarily the west where
nothing
we are.
Nothing in western Kentucky. So
I think it's kind of a neat phenomenon and a little bit misleading. Folks will look at when we watch the weather at night or Weather Channel app or whatever, they'll list those rainfall totals and say, oh, well, we're fine. We're right with our numbers. But we live and die by averages. And a lot of times we can hit our average and it still be a dry year. My grandfather used to say for years, you know, that Kentucky gets 45 inches of rain a year. But if it all comes in March and April, it's going to be a dry year. And that's that we kind of experienced that this year with the wetter spring and then the long extended dry period.
In agriculture, it's all about timely rainfall. And again, that first drought we had, through spring we were all right, but we got to June and it hit right there at Tassel and Silk and whatnot. And pretty well, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but that's about the absolute worst time to have some water stress. And, you know, we had all that rain. I think it was one of our wetter Julys on record, carried somewhat into the month of August. And then it shut down again. I think you all in Western Kentucky went two separate months without much in the way of rainfall. And
you know, it was kind of spotty even then, you know, when we came through. And right where I live, we never did really get any rain to amount to anything, you know. So
June and August.
Yeah, I mean, it, for sure, you know. So
June and July almost flip-flopped for us this year. We're used to having a little rain in June, and then maybe it gets a little drier in July and the first part of August. That completely, changed places. We were dry all through June and had a little rain, spotty rain in July, and then cut back off in August.
And they alluded to that earlier, but in, you know, where I am in Webster County, they've been pretty tough on me about us getting rains. But, you know, we were in a little pocket there, and I'm thankful for it. But, you know, we did pick up some rains when nobody else was really getting any. And they weren't really big rains necessarily, but we was getting them at the right times. And so that June, we were still picking up rains. But now in the fall, we have not. But
were doing the correct rain dance.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Absolutely. She was doing something. I don't know what it was, but it was something.
Talking about this past month here, I brought some data with me. We finally got a rain event last night, yesterday. Portions of Western Kentucky, Central Kentucky, half inch to 1 inch here and there. Then you got over to Eastern Kentucky, and it's maybe a tenth, 2/10 of an inch. But prior to that rain event, the state had only averaged 0.41 inches for the previous 30 days. So there were some places across Central and Western Kentucky that were still below a tenth of an inch over that 30-day period. And we're talking, for you all, 3+ inches below normal over that time period. But you were just talking about it. your last significant rainfall was probably, what, Labor Day weekend or whatnot.
Right.
So if you go back 60 days, we're talking anywhere from 4 to 6 inches below normal. So if I go back and talk about flash droughts, this is actually starting to turn into a longer-term hydrologic drought. That's whenever we start seeing hydrologic issues like we're seeing with the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys are seeing some farm ponds diminishing, streams running dry. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they'll benefit from the 0.5 to 1 inch rain, but this wasn't a drought buster. As you guys know, we need a lot more. It'd be nice if we had a hurricane come up from the Gulf without the impacts down there.
Absolutely.
But it hasn't happened this year. I remember back in 12, I think Isaac, I believe, that saved parts of agriculture later in the year, because I want to say we got a widespread 1-2 inches plus of rainfall from that system. And that was your slow soaking rainfall. It wasn't a whole lot of runoff. So
I think back. Talk about Isaac. I can think back to some more eye-related hurricanes through the years. Ike, Ivan, and Isaac, all three had a significant impact in their prospective years on agriculture. And in the western part of the state, that a lot of times is our double crop soybeans.
Yeah. Yeah.
We think of Labor Day as being the cutoff time for when they really need some rain, where it's a dire situation. And it typically does. A hurricane that might track up that Mississippi Valley does us good sometimes, without all due respect to the impact that they have on the South.
Yeah. I'd
like to avoid that if we could.
Yeah, I don't think we're not used to being this dry this late. I think we're adept at being dry in the middle of the summer.
Absolutely.
But this late in the year, I think when we've got such dry conditions, I don't think folks are just we haven't had it in so long.
Yeah.
We're just not used to it.
For depending on when somebody may listen to this podcast, we're recording in the end of October, and we think about November in the state of Kentucky as being a wetter month. That's typically when we get some rain and get some catch up. We certainly need that for the wheat crop and for any type of replenishment to our water table, because you dig down pretty deep and
pretty dry.
It's pretty dry on deep into the ground. So, subsoil moisture is at a minimum right now in places.
It's time to recharge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It is.
And I don't think coming to Lexington, I don't think I saw a pasture that folks needed not to be feeding hay. Folks have just, it's just grazed it into the ground, and we could benefit by some timely rains right now for sure. We're not going to have that flush of growth probably like we normally have, but
everything's going dormant now.
Yeah,
too,
so. Absolutely.
And you don't have the moisture there to be renovating any pastures or you mentioned wheat. I mean, even getting wheat in the ground, there's just not moisture there.
I planted grass seed a month ago in some pastures, and luckily, we've not had any germination, just enough to get it to germ and get up and then perish because it's so dry. It just hadn't had enough moisture to germinate, period.
Yep.
So, I'm not sure what this is going to do. We had a half inch at the house last night, so, we'll see what happens.
If we had a mild November.
It'll probably be all right.
That's right.
It'll probably be all right.
You say that.
bad news. This is getting better.
No. I got some good news, I think. So just hopefully it verifies. So looking ahead, we have another. We're recording this on the 26th of October. We have another rain event going to get here Sunday, Monday timeline. Now I'm not looking at a whole lot of rain with that system. But going into the first week of November, long-range outlooks are hinting at higher confidence and above normal rainfall. So hopefully that pans out. Going past that two-week time period, I get a little hesitant looking at the outlooks, just to be honest. But the first week of November's also looking warmer than normal. So I'm hoping that trend sticks.
Yep.
And
hope my grass seed comes up and survives.
And I mean, and this drought is causing issues just like soil sampling.
Yeah.
You know,
can't even get the probe in the ground.
Yeah. And then you're looking at, you know, the accuracy of the, you know, the actual sample that you're getting, because it's better to just wait. You know, it's just, we think about the yield. We think about all the yield issues and things like that, which is a huge issue. But just normal fall activities that you think about doing right now, it's you just got to hold off.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and even looking out further, Matt, you know, I've heard the persimmon seed forecast.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't care for it much.
And just wondered. Woolly worms.
So let's get your take on maybe what this winter is going, what's going to happen this winter just in general.
Put me on the spot.
Well, he told you he was in the hot seat.
Yeah. So looking out to December through February, honestly, confidence isn't really high this year. We have something called a triple dip La Nina occurring. You may or may not have heard of it already, but La Nina is a climate oscillation that tends to give us a decent idea what our winters will be like in Kentucky. It's based on sea surface temperatures in the equatorial Pacific Ocean, and that can impact our weather patterns here in the United States and across the world. Now, La Niñas, and I should preface this by saying strong La Niñas, typically give us a wetter winter here in the lower Ohio Valley. But this is a weak La Niña. And I tell everyone, weak La Niñas, it can really go either way. Looking back in history, we've only had two other times on record where we've had three La Niñas in a row. So we don't have a lot of data on this this triple dip La Niña. But anyways, once again, confidence isn't all that high this year. Now, looking back at the past decade, we've had some really wet winters in Kentucky, and they've been warmer for the most part. Yes, what was it, February 2021, it was pretty cold. We had a few ice storms move through the area. But generally speaking, our winters have been warmer here in Kentucky as of late, and they've been wetter. Now, I hope that happens this year because we need it. Now, a lot of the cattle producers aren't a big fan because the ground's not freezing like it used to, and mud's becoming a bigger and bigger problem. But, you know, we don't want to go into next spring with this drought sticking around. Mm-hmm. So if we can keep up with this pattern of some wetter winters, I'm going to take it. So I got the latest winter outlook from the National Weather Service here in front of me. Once again, temperatures could go either way. Precipitation could go either way for the most part. Maybe a little higher odds for above normal precipitation. But something that's a little concerning to me is they also released this winter 2022 U.S. drought outlook. And there's a lot of brown on this map in the Great Plains area and getting into the Missouri Valley and whatnot. And that means drought continuing or worsening. And part of that's starting to creep into Western Kentucky. So, you know, once again, hopefully we get that rainfall and we don't have to deal with this. But we definitely don't want to go into winter, have some dry conditions, and then start out spring
in a deficit.
So.
Well, that's never good news.
No.
Well, you guys know the weatherman's not always right.
So. I was going to say, should we just wrap this show up right now?
You've said enough now. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, we talk about this information. We talk about the short-term outlook. From a meteorologist's point of view, how does a farmer take this information and make management decisions with it?
So, confidence speaking, first one out 4 days, pretty good idea what's going to happen. Our timing's there for the next precipitation event. you know, make your decisions when to spray, we'll have a pretty good idea. You go out 5, 6, 7 days, we know there's going to be a cold front move through. When does that cold front, what time does it exactly move through? You get out next week, well, we have a decent idea. It's going to be warmer than normal. Now, what's the high temperature going to be next Wednesday, Thursday? I'm indifferent on that. But it's definitely looking warmer. You go out the next month, 3 months, we start looking at these climate oscillations like El Nino, La Nina. Try to give us an idea of what conditions could be like. Now, whenever we talk about El Nino and La Nina, it gives us an idea of what the whole winter is going to be like if we go back to the winter outlook. That doesn't mean we can't have, you know, some Arctic cold air outbreaks here and there, some extreme winter weather here and there. We can't pick up on that 3 months out. So, anyways, the first 3 or 4 days, pretty good. We have something called the Point Ag Forecast on our website, weather.uky.edu. And that tool set came around from, you know, you may be watching the 6 p.m. news broadcast, and the meteorologist says the high, the low on the day, precipitation, so on and so forth. But farmers need a little bit more information. When can they go spray? I mean, dicamba has been a hot topic.
just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
What's drying conditions going to be like the next week? How many growing degree days are we going to accumulate?
With dicamba, what are the chances of a temperature inversion?
But our Point Ag forecast, we take the forecast down into 3-hour increments. So you get a more definitive forecast throughout the day. You know, when can I start planting? You know, when is it going to start raining? When is it going to end? So on and so forth. So more definitive information.
Yeah. Is that for the whole state of Kentucky, or is that kind of this region, that not necessarily maybe far western Kentucky? How do y'all do that?
It's for the entire state.
Okay.
Every county has its own Point Ag forecast. To tell you the truth, this goes out across the nation also.
Okay.
The data, the weather information, comes in from the National Weather Service. It's something called the National Digital Forecast Database. Long name there. But the National Weather Service, they're located all across the United States. Our tax dollars are going to them. They have someone at the office 365 a year, 24 hours a day, you name it. So they're always constantly updating the forecasts to the most accurate information. So, sorry, I'm hitting the table and probably hearing the bump come through. That's me waving my hands. But anyways, we love using that information. We feel that's the best weather forecast you can get. And then we take some of that information and include some agricultural-based forecasts like drying conditions, spraying conditions, livestock heat stress, livestock cold stress. And tell you guys right now, we're working on a new county product for next year. So we're going to try to take our website. There's a lot on it. And try to condense it down into maybe several products. And, so anyways, look forward to that in 2023.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We'll make sure and include the link to that website in our show notes.
I appreciate that.
I think that's something folks would be interested in looking at, and really something that agents should be helping to promote a little more. You know, I don't know that lot of us know that detailed of information is there.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I mean, you know, that's probably something we need to work on as a group. We need to work on that more.
Yep, sure. I think about some of the regional weather stations and the mesonet system and things like that that are around. As good as they are, they're just current conditions. We're not able to make forecasts off of that.
Yeah.
And even then, I've seen situations where those weather stations, because of their location, those numbers might have been skewed just a little bit because of where they were. We in Christian County actually moved a mezzanette site because the original site was set up where we had free land, I mean, where we had good land to work with, but it was at our landfill, right over an active part of the landfill, so the temperature was always 3 or 4 degrees gotcha. Warmer right there because of digesting,
right.
you know, mm-hmm. breaking down materials than maybe a mile up the road would have been. So
yeah.
I think that's an important thing to remember, the difference between current conditions and the mm-hmm. forecast that we can get through this.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, just talking about from an ag perspective and our producers and from an educational standpoint, I mean, I think that just – understanding how to use the data that have available on the website, because you know, when we think of weather, you know, most people are thinking just your local weather, and you're looking at if it's going to rain or not and what the temperature is going to be, mm-hmm. you know, but just being able to
you've got some tools there that you can use for management decisions that folks may not be aware of, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to help folks be aware of this you know, when we get our podcast out, you know, to folks and that type of thing. But now I've made no bones that I'm not a big snow fan. So if you want to step into this, you know, you can, you know, but I've heard lots of folks talk about the, you know, as we talked earlier about the persimmon deal, and they've seen the spoon, which means you've got to dig out a bunch of snow. So I'm always interested, because if I never see another snowflake, I'm good. but if you want to dive into that, you know, do you see any big, you know, and I know it's so hard to tell, you know, it's one of them things.
Well, once again, it's hard to look out that far. But, you know, guys, there were portions of the bluegrass eastern half of Kentucky that saw snow last week.
Yeah.
I saw it on the news.
I saw some pictures out of Boyle County that the ground was covered.
Yeah.
Not the concrete area, but grass elevated surfaces mm-hmm. covered. And that happening in the middle of October, that might kind of send a bad omen.
Yeah.
But, you know, right. I tell everyone, I was just talking to some coworkers about this. We're due. Of course, Eastern Kentucky, they saw a few ice storms back in 2021. It was a bad mm-hmm. deal. But talking about snow, we haven't had big-time snowfall since probably the winter of 2015, January, February of that year. I got a story for you guys real quick.
All right.
You know, that year, sometime in February, I'm here at UK campus, and I help out the president, the provost, and higher administration on when to make the call,
mm-hmm.
when to cancel classes and everything. And I remember the day before, there was a solid bet we were going to get more than a foot of snow, and that doesn't happen in Kentucky.
Yeah. Right.
This was my first time getting on the call and hearing President Capiluto on there. Yeah, Matt, what's the forecast going to be?
Put you right on the spot, didn't he?
Gulp. And I said, you know, there's pretty high confidence we're going to see a foot of snow. And then I hear the line go silent. And I'm sitting there chilling, and I shouldn't say chilling. I was, sweating.
You're sweaty.
A little bit.
Yeah, sweating.
But anyways, he goes, foot of snow? And I said, yeah. And normally we don't cancel till the morning of to make sure the forecast is verified. And I remember him saying, well, let's go ahead and cancel classes for tomorrow. And I'll tell you what, I was up that entire night making sure that snowfall verified. So
we got it, though.
Yeah.
We got 17 inches in Lexington.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've never seen snow like that in my life.
Yep.
But once again, that's probably the last time we saw big-time snow. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the year that we got two big snows, one in February, or were they both in March?
One in February, one in March.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. We got two big snows in,
Yep. We canceled classes at UK, I think, for about 2 weeks that semester.
We did, too, because our offices were closed that year. Yeah,
a week each time.
Yeah, it was a week each time. And it was bitter cold.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the other part. So the night after that big-time snowstorm, or a couple nights later, Richmond, Kentucky was the big so-called winter, I'll put in quotations, because 2 feet of snow is not fun.
Right.
But so skies cleared, and we had something called radiational cooling. So we're losing all the heat from the surface. It's all reflecting, going back up through the atmosphere into space. And anyways, I saw that thermometer just start plunging. And the Richmond, Kentucky Mesonet Station got down to minus 32 degrees that night. Now, to put that in perspective, and you guys might remember this, the all-time record low in the state of Kentucky is minus 37 in Shelbyville back in 1994. So I don't know if you guys remember that event.
I actually heard that event referenced on a completely different podcast just in the past couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was actually an outdoors-related podcast, but they were talking about that.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we don't get that cold.
Yeah, I remember 15 because we were calving right in the middle of all that. So, it was a good time.
David doesn't like cold weather either.
No, I'm not.
He's more of
a
fair weather kind of person.
Well,
very selective.
David, you were talking about the seed and the spoon and the persimmon seed.
Yep.
Not that I put any amount of real confidence in those type of things, but I will let you know I counted 8 fogs in August.
Oh, that's no good either. That's no good either.
Yeah, we have
more good news.
Yeah, we have somebody. Well, actually, our Webster County Cattlemen's Association page, he keeps that up, and he counts the fogs and puts that on the page. Yeah. So,
old wives' tales. They're always, and of course, my grandparents believed in those things. You know, yeah. And of course, that's where I got a lot of my knowledge from, some of those things. So, it's.
I like to compare them. I mean, you know, not that I've based my life off of them, my planning, but I do like to compare them to what's going on and see how close they are.
Yeah.
What color woolly worms have you guys seen this year?
Most of the ones I've seen have just very little black on them. They're mostly brown, a little bit of black on each end, not the wide bands, you know. But I've only seen a few, so.
I haven't seen very many at all.
I haven't seen very many. Yeah, that's the other thing that I haven't seen very many. So,
I think the thing about weather, that advances that we have made, I mean, just like in any industry, you know, we're making advances. But, you know, we started off talking about how crazy the weather has been in Kentucky this year and disasters, you know, having a tornado, a drought, and a flood all – you know, within a few months time, you know. But going back to the tornado, I think one of the things that we were able to see this time that, you know, maybe 15 years ago wouldn't happen was the lead time that these communities had to get ready. And I think I know there was a lot of loss of life, but I think it scares me to think about how bad it could have been if it was back, you know, because there was times that you had sheer minutes, to get in place, you know, and to have that lead time. Do you want to kind of touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. So I did an interview last Thursday or whatnot about the tornadoes out in western and south central Kentucky. And one of the things I said during that interview is I want to give a round of applause to the National Weather Service meteorologists, the broadcast meteorologists across the state, because they did a phenomenal job with that event. I would call them heroes, too, because as you were saying, the forecast leading up to the event was awesome. Not in what happened, but just getting that warning out there.
Their accuracy.
Yeah. So as a meteorologist, I think I can speak for all the meteorologists across the state of Kentucky. We had a pretty good idea 4 or 5, maybe even 6 days out. There were hints there that we could see a major storm event. And as we were getting closer, all the ingredients started coming together. And that's when all the meteorologists, broadcast meteorologists, they start educating the public. You know, what's the difference between a watch and a warning? Where do you need to take shelter? How are you going to get warning? So on and so forth. And we got to the day of the event, and all the ingredients were there. We had instability in place. That's your storm fuel. We had wind shear. Wind shear is winds changing direction with height, wind speed increasing with height. We had plenty of moisture in place. We had dew points approaching 70 degrees. We don't see that in early December. That's the sticky humidity we typically see in July and August. We had temperatures in the 70s, so everything was coming together. And we had those first tornado warnings pop that evening down in Arkansas. I believe it was east of Jonesboro, the main EF4 that moved through Kentucky. And it was on the ground after the surveys were done, and maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it was on the ground for, I believe it was 88 miles through portions of Arkansas, the Missouri Boot Hill, and Tennessee, and it lifted right before getting to Kentucky, and then it was on the ground for 165.7 miles. But anyways, going back to the warning process, I saw some things with this storm I've never seen. First off, talking to some NWS meteorologists over in Paducah, the average warning lead time for most tornadoes is typically less than 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. There were warnings going out with lead times of 20, 25 minutes with this storm. I saw something on social media from the NWS in Paducah. When this supercell was going through Tennessee, they put on there, you know, folks in Fulton County, Graves County, Mayfield area, you need to keep an eye on this storm because it's coming. And based on what they're seeing in the environment, there's no stopping this thing. It's gonna stay on the ground, keep on moving, and it did. Monster, beast of a storm. I've never seen anything like it. I hope we never see anything like it again. You know, something I mentioned last week is if you take the 88 mile track before it lifted a very short period of time and combine it with the 165.7 mile track, if it wouldn't have lifted, it would have broke the record for the longest track tornado ever recorded. That was 1925, the Tri-State Tornado went through Missouri, Southern Illinois, and lifted in Southwest Indiana. It was on the ground for 219 miles. So what we saw that night was very rare. Going back to it, the local meteorologist did a phenomenal job. Once again, a round of applause to those folks because, you know, we had quite a few, unfortunately, a lot of lives lost, 70-plus. One life lost is too many. But like you were saying, it could have been a lot worse. I mean, this is in early December. The sun's down at that time.
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
And
I'll say I was out that day. I was in, you know, a lot of people are when it's 70 degrees in December, you know, you're outside. But I was with my coworkers, and of course we had talked about, you know, that they were talking about bad storms coming through, possible tornadoes. And we all said at that time, it just feels weird out here.
Yeah.
When you were outside, it just did not feel right. We've had 70 degree weather before in December and January, but it didn't feel like that.
Yeah.
It was very just eerie feeling, you know, and then sitting there watching that unfold on our TVs. And, I was not in a county that, you know, that it went through. Of course, it did in Jays County, which is a neighboring county. But, you know, I think all of us were watching that and calling people in those counties saying, hey, are you all right? It's coming your way. I just, you know, everybody's checking on everybody and watching that unfold was.
We had damage, a peripheral storm with that one in Southern Christian County. I live in North Christian, but I work in Hopkins County where Dawson Springs is located. So it never left the ground in my county.
Yeah.
And we were only fortunate in the fact that the second half of its path as it crossed through Hopkins County, specifically where it crossed Interstate 69, from there to the next county line is all reclaimed coal mine land.
Okay.
So while it did damage, there was no structural damage. There was no houses. One person reported a roof off of a barn in that area. Now, west of I-69, from there back to the Caldwell County line, that path through Dawson Springs, as bad as it was its worst in Dawson Springs because it hit a residential area. Mm-hmm. And as it left there, it was only skipping through residential areas. There was not a solid line of houses per se. So bad all the same. Nothing good about it.
You know, peak winds were 190 miles per hour. I mean, it's hard to fathom. Ben Rudy down in Fulton County, mm-hmm. he sent me a picture and corn stalk mm-hmm. shoved into a tree. Now, I challenge anybody to go take your hand and try to shove a corn stalk in a
right.
tree.
He sent us the same
he
picture.
Did.
Yeah. That's power. That's yes. power to the extreme. And that's why we tell folks to take shelter during mm-hmm. these things. It's the debris mm-hmm. that's being spun around that can be deadly.
My son is a student at Murray State and living in the dorms, only 20 minutes from Mayfield, which received, of course, you know, national coverage for the damage they had. And he texted me and his mother that evening and said it was his last day of school and he was going to stay that night and have fun with friends and come home on Saturday morning. And he texted us about 7 o'clock that night and said, "Do I need to head home?" And I said, "Absolutely not. Wherever you're at, stay there.
Just, get in the basement.
Stay mm-hmm. stay where you're at." And living in a dorm, they went through the protocol. They pulled them all out and got them in yeah. safe areas, which I was proud of. They had no damage whatsoever, lost electric for a little while, but then they got it back within a few hours. Yeah. The importance of being able to forecast that out into those extended minutes. And it's not 15 minutes to 25 minutes. Doesn't seem like a lot of extra time, but it's a huge yeah, amount of time yeah. when you're trying to get someplace safe.
Yep. And, you know, you were talking about Murray State. It seems like Bowling Green tornado, mm-hmm. Sometimes it gets lost in the news because of the EF4. Mm-hmm. But the Bowling Green tornado, it got close to WKU
yeah,
campus.
It did.
Yeah.
Very close. And we measure the intensity of these things based on the enhanced Fujita scale. And it goes from an EF0 to an EF5. And the EF3 that went through Bowling Green was estimated peak winds of 165 miles per hour. It goes to EF4 at 166. So this was a high-end EF3. What's the difference between a high-end EF3 and a low-end EF4? It was a strong tornado. But yeah, the difference in, you know, 15-minute lead time, it can get you in a good spot.
Yeah.
And even I tell people, if you're in a mobile home, get out. Get to your neighbor's house or someone you know. Get into a sturdy shelter because mobile homes is the absolute worst place you want to be. I read some statistics. This is several years back, but mobile homes maybe 80, 90 miles per hour, and that's about it. So,
if you get caught outside, you know, if you just happen to, you know, say it, you don't have that lead time, and you get caught outside, and there's not a structure, what is the best thing we can do?
Good question.
I experienced that one time, so go ahead.
Well, I mean, use your best judgment. If you see it on the ground and you can get away from it, that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's always find that lowest spot you can get. You're trying to get under the debris. Do not go in under an overpass. Those overpasses are like a wind tunnel.
It's like a vacuum. It'll suck you right out.
Yeah.
And so avoid overpasses. But by all means, first thing I'm doing, if I see it on the ground, I'm seeing where it is and see if I can get away from it and get to a safe shelter.
Yeah.
But, I mean, hopefully you're not in that situation. You got some warning ahead of time. Maybe there's a tornado watch that was issued, meaning conditions are favorable for tornadoes. Mm-hmm. You got a plan for that day where to go. So
and folks need to take that stuff seriously.
Yeah.
They really do. I mean, sure. It's
No,
you're fine.
I've had this conversation quite a few times the past year. A lot of people, they're more likely to go out to their porch and see it. Mm-hmm. And they're just, you know, well, we've seen 20, 30 tornado warnings the past so many years, and it's never hit us. You never know when that next one is going to hit you.
Right.
And, yeah, and I'll tell you guys, I went on a tornado survey. This was back 2014, 15, I can't remember. I had baseball size of hail at my house, and a tornado touched down the road in Paris. And I went and helped them out, was looking around the house, saw the kitchen wall was blown out, and was walking around the house, and a lady tapped me on the shoulder, said, "Can I help you?" I said, "I'm just helping out with this tornado survey." She goes, "Well, you know, I heard the sirens go off. Curiosity got the best of me. I went to the kitchen window and saw the leaves flying past, started seeing branches. Here comes the tornado. Tornado ripped that kitchen wall out, ripped her with it, and she landed face first in her driveway. She had, I think it was like 15 stitches in her lip. And she was lucky that was, you know, only 15 stitches for that to happen. But, you know, once again, curiosity gets the best of us sometimes. And we were looking at her house, and in the middle of her one-story house, she had a bathroom in the middle of the house, all four walls still completely standing. So you never know. I tell everyone, take tornado warning seriously. You don't know when that next one's going to hit.
You know, we've always heard that about the interior of the house and specifically about the bathroom. A tornado in Christian County in 2005, and one of my good friends, a guy I graduated high school with, lost his house. He, his wife, and his young daughter at that time all piled in the bathroom and huddled down. The house was right there on 91, David, by, mm-hmm. by Sinking Fort Baptist Church.
Yep.
You may remember all that was standing was the bathroom,
yep.
the shower, and the yep. commode, and the rest of the house was leveled. Yep. And every time I hear somebody say that, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Another house out by my house on Greenville Road was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
That bathroom was all that was standing.
Yep.
The whole idea is you're trying to put the most walls between you and the outdoor environment. That's what's going to save you. And if you can get down to a bathtub, that's even better. Put a mattress over your head, that's even better. If you got a bike helmet, put it over your head, that's even better. Sometimes you don't always have that much time. But just simply get into that innermost room in your house or the lowest level. If you got a basement, that's fantastic. So if I had some emergency preparedness information for you all, find that safe shelter and have a way to get warning. No weather radio. Yeah, you might have apps on your phone. Sometimes I don't trust the apps. That's just me personally speaking. But that no weather radio, it's programmed to your county. It's going to go off at 2 a.m. in the morning. It's going to wake you up and get you out of the bed. I know some people can sleep pretty soundly at night, and I'm not one of those guys. But anyways, that no weather radio for $30-$40, it'll save your life. And so if there's one thing I would go do right after you hear this podcast, go buy a no weather radio. So.
Right.
Well, sounds like a great timely tip.
I was
Jay.
Fixing to say we probably need to add that to what we do. We always try to wrap this show up with a timely tip, something that's pertinent to. We're on the long end of the hurricane season now, but we're close enough, you know, as our experience has dictated, that we might have tornadoes not too far down the road. So this week's timely tip is to educate yourself on watching weather trends and to have a disaster readiness plan before you. I'm going to tack on to that. The first thing you probably need is that NOAA weather radio.
Absolutely.
As far as disaster readiness plans, Matt and I both serve on a committee right now that's being basically, our focus is disaster preparedness for the state of Kentucky, and it's something it actually started post-tornado with the tornadoes in western Kentucky on December 10th, but it's come to grow and include some of the information that we've gone for with the floods in eastern Kentucky. Disasters come in all different shapes and sizes, and all of them are related to the weather, but they might not all need the same readiness plan. There's different readiness plans for different disasters.
Yeah, it's, you know, and looking back over the past four decades, the number of natural disasters is increasing here in the state of Kentucky. Unfortunately, 80s to 2010s, we're seeing an upward tick. And being ready for any type of disaster, whether that's floods, tornadoes, drought, we're in that territory right now. Do you have enough winter hay to get you through? That's a big question. If this keeps on going, do you have alternative sources of water? Things to think about. Ice storm. You know, what if you're without power for a week?
I was without power for 15 days.
Yeah.
11 for me. So that was that last ice storm.
It's good questions to ask yourself for any type of natural disaster, because history tells us they've happened this past year. We've had some pretty rare ones occur, and they're going to happen again. It's just we don't know when.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap that up. It's going to happen at some point, and it's just a matter of whether or not you're prepared for it or not. So, Matt, we appreciate you coming on and talking with us. It's been a good thing. I can only think of a dozen other shows we probably need to sit down and do together, too. You've been a great guest. We're glad to have you, and we want to thank our hosts also for this week's information and thank our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters. Awesome, man.
That's good.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, that was really good. That's timely right there.
Yeah, the weather radio, I didn't
either. That's good.